We're going to start. Members, I'll be using my left hand for gavels for a few minutes here until we round up the real deal here. But it is an official beginning of the meeting. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. When we have a quorum, I would be honored to move the minutes.
Wonderful. Thank you, Representative Hornstein. We've got the beginning of several busy committee hearings here. We've got four bills up today. They're pretty meaty bills. We're going to continue to chew on meaty bills for the next couple of weeks. And so what we've done is we've scheduled an overflow time to complete our work each day. And so we've got 6 p.m., is that correct? On the schedule, you should have been advised of that a while back. I think here in this room again?
It's a labor.
Not sure. Okay, so stay posted. But whatever we don't finish today, we'll carry over into the evening and hopefully finish then. We also have a Friday hearing scheduled. Originally had scheduled that in the afternoon. I'm trying to move it up to the morning because I think I'll become a very unpopular chair if I keep people here on Friday afternoons when they can easily meet on Friday morning. So stay posted on that. I think we do we have quorum? We do have quorum. Representative Hornstein, if you would be so kind as to move the minutes of Thursday, February 21st, I would greatly appreciate it.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Hornstein moves approval of the minutes of February 21st. Discussion. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Minutes are approved. Thank you, members. Before I start with our business, let me do some other business. And I neglected to do this, and I apologize to our pages and to our committee members, but you know, we do have 2 new pages this year, and they've been working our committee for quite a while now, and I think it's about time that we flush them out of the shadows and have them come forward and introduce themselves. And if you haven't had a chance to have a conversation with these 2 young folks, I encourage you to do so. They're terrific. And so let me just ask you, just kind of step forward, tell us your name, where you're from, and
I'm Emily.
Wonderful. Welcome, Emily. It's good working with you this year.
My name is Matt Deere. I'm originally from Regina. I went to Penn College. I have a degree in computer science and
Oli. All right. And Oli. Okay. Well, welcome. It's a pleasure to work with you, too, this year. And you've been working awfully hard, and we greatly appreciate it. Our first bill up today is House File 3329, Representative Breiner. And Representative Breiner did a brief presentation at our first meeting a little while ago about the work that she and a number of other members in a working group have been working on in the interim. And I've participated in perhaps half of those hearings, and I can tell you, members, it's been a lot of work, a lot of hard work, and a lot of very earnest and dutiful work. And I think, I know that we're going to have a good discussion today as part of the fruits of their work. And so, Representative Breiner, I'm going to move that House File 3329 be recommended to pass. And I think our motion, our path here would be to send this to K-12 finance. So the bill is before us, and Representative Breiner, we are all yours.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'd like to begin. I have an amendment that you should have in your packet, H3329A1, and I need to make a small correction to that amendment. It just duplicates another correction on here, so it should be easy to do orally, but I'm going to have Lisa Larson do it simply because she has the expertise, so
if
you wouldn't mind.
Thank you, Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Reinert, members, on the document 83329A1, on page 1, after line 9, insert page 13, line 7, delete the Minnesota Assessment Group and the. On page 13, line 8, delete Local Assessment and Advisory Committee and insert a recognized Minnesota assessment group composed of assessment and evaluation directors and staff and researchers. These same changes are reflected on page 1, line 2 of the amendment, and again on page 1, line 15 and following of the amendment.
So, members, we will discuss that language, but this will basically put this amendment in the, the amendment will put the bill in the shape that Representative Reiner wishes it to be before us. And so I'm going to move adoption of Amendment A1 with the oral description that was just given by Ms. Larson. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion approved. Your bill is amended, and you'll call, circle back and describe what we did there with that, that change, Representative Reiner. And so we're all yours.
Would you like me to speak to the amendment, Mr. Chair? I would actually just like to speak to the bill, and then as the because most of the changes in there are minor, except to move to a more generic definition of the advisory group. So
I agree, Representative Reiner. Yes.
All right. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. As you know, this bill is the result of the interim work of the E-12 Education Accountability Workgroup. Because I've already reported on that process, I will be brief in summarizing the work that led to this proposal. The group was convened out of last session's charge to work with curriculum and measurement experts to consider how we might fully, fairly, and accurately report student achievement and emphasize school excellence, using multiple performance measures that are objective and consistent with the highest standards in the field of educational measurements and accountability. We partnered with the University of Minnesota's College of Education and Human Development to form an advisory team that worked with us throughout our research and public hearings. Dr. David Johnson is in the audience today with us. He's the Associate Dean for Research and Policy at the university, and he's available if anyone has questions about the university's role in our process. In the course of our public hearings, we took testimony on the current report card and its measures. We then asked a broad range of organizations and individuals to respond to this question. In reporting to parents and the public on the success of our schools, what indicators would you suggest and what tools would you recommend to monitor progress? We asked that the recommendations be research-based and useful to parents and the general public. We had 20-plus answers to this question. With the help of our advisory team and staff, we worked to synthesize recommendations and focus on the strongest research-based measures. The three resulting areas were growth and value added, completion of rigorous coursework, and climate, safety, and engagement. We then shaped three expert advisory teams that led to the current legislation. So I will briefly now review House File 3329. Dry mouth. All right. And I'm going to be very brief, but certainly I'll accommodate any ongoing questions, but I want to give ample time to our expert testifiers that we have with us today. So, Section 1 is a series of definitions related to the accountability system, and we are in discussion with the commissioner and the department on these definitions and are open to modifying them to accommodate a more robust definition of value added. Section 2, changes here are not substantive except that on 435, the growth-based value-added measure is specified. One of the reasons that a lot of existing legislation is a part of this bill simply because we made an effort to create coherence in that section of statute. So you'll see that some of the corrections are very minor in the early pages. Okay, that was Section 2. Section 3, Subdivision 1, broadens the focus of the accountability system, and we can certainly speak to that broadened definition later. Section 4, Subdivision 1, includes the proposed growth model. Am I going too fast? I can slow down if you'd like me, if you really want to follow. Slow down a little, Dean? All right, I'll do that.
You are talking to legislators, so I... Keep that in mind.
Large picture.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure quite how to interpret that comment, so I won't say anything else. All right. Section 4, Subdivision 1, includes the proposed growth model. Subdivision 2 relates to the expectation of No Child Left Behind, and here we designate those expectations as federally mandated. You'll see that in this legislation we are differentiating between federally mandated and state measures. Subdivision 3, 9-1, we're on page 9 now, first introduces, and this is what I consider to be the heart of the legislation, it first introduces the three recommended state measures. Paragraphs A and B relate to the growth-based value-added model. Again, we are in discussion with the commissioner and the department on an amendment to this section that would include our proposal and also maintain the intent of the deleted language for a fuller, more robust value-added component in the future. Paragraph C, 925, introduces the high school course completion measures. Paragraph D, 10.8 through 10.14, introduces the school safety, engagement, and relationship measure. Subdivision 4, we're on page 10 now, 10.15 to 10.25, requires that the growth model be used to identify best practices and that additional assistance be provided to schools not making either federally mandated or state norms. The effective dates for this this section of the legislation range from 2009 through 2011. Section 5 directs the commissioner to report the three state measures and puts in statute what is currently on the report card, minus staff salaries. Sections 7, 8, and 9 detail the implementation of the particulars around the measures, and we can certainly look at these more closely in discussion. But I believe the expert testimony will help to elucidate those sections. I would like to move now to the expert testimony for each of these measures. Because Dr. Mariama needs to get to a 9 o'clock appointment, we're going to switch in terms of the order of the measures and begin with course completion measures. So I'd like to introduce to you Jeff Mariama, who is an Associate Vice President and Professor of Educational Psychology at the University of Minnesota and was part of our team of advisors in the course completion measures. Dr. Mariama.
Professor Brenner, before we do that, let me just ask you, and this is just some overall, a little bit more background in this question. I'm going to ask you a question, too, in a second. Can you distinguish for us, very quickly, the difference between the state school report card and our statewide accountability system as required under NCLB and as exists as our dominant sort of accountability framework? Are we talking about the same thing? Are we talking about two different things? If you could summarize very quickly, what would be the main difference between those two?
I would say we're talking about complementary systems of measurement, or complementary systems of accountability in terms of our conversation with the public about the performance of our schools. The report card itself began because of requirements of No Child Left Behind, but our state has already expanded that context, you know, to include other measures, but there are certain measures required by No Child Left Behind. So that's one aspect of the report card, but this legislation grew out of last session's report card legislation, which asked that we look more broadly at accountability measures. And so these the measures we're proposing are a part of what we might consider a state accountability system, which could be parallel and complementary to the federal accountability system.
And this, Representative Brinder, in terms of sort of my term, holding schools accountable, is it the report card that does that? Is it the statewide accountability system that exists to comply with NCLB? What I want to get at is sort of a clarity in our minds that, one, we don't do damage, one, to the other, and, two, to be able to distinguish those, I understand that your bill does not denigrate or you know, begin to dissolve our statewide accountability system. And so I just, you know, I just want to get that out on the table very clearly.
Well, that's correct, Mr. Chair. I would say that the intention here is to broaden our perspective and our vision for accountability while in no way challenging the state's current approach to responding to the federal No Child Left Behind requirements and the state accountability system that has been developed in service of NCLB.
And Ms. Larson, if you could perhaps just quickly kind of remind us of the current status of the report card in terms of what we did last year in the legislation that was passed. Where are we currently in terms of reporting out in the report card? Generally, what did we direct within that legislation beyond the existence of a group that would help to develop broader standards and measurements for us within the report card?
Mr. Chairman, members, until last year, the report card in part was premised on a system designating high-performing and low-performing schools. The impetus for taking away that particular designation was a perception that the measure was incomplete in the sense that it was an all-or-nothing proposition. What Representative Reinert is proposing is really something intended to supplement what currently exists. Our accountability system now is premised on the requirements of No Child Left Behind, and there is nothing in the federal law that forecloses the state from supplementing what the federal law currently requires, and this is what Representative Reinert is proposing to do.
Thank you. Mr. Bariama, welcome, and I understand you have news to share about your victory in your over 40 basketball league. You can certainly crow about that here in public, and then perhaps tell us the Warriors injury that you suffered as a result.
Representative Marianne, members of the committee, I do have a dislocated finger from basketball last night, and he told me I'm a little too old, but it was an over 40 league, so I think it's okay. And we did win the championship game in overtime.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, before Dr. Marianne starts, I'd just like to refer members to the relevant section of the legislation mm-hmm. that he will be speaking to.
Very good.
925 through... 10-7, and then all of Section 8, which is 13-19 through 14-11, are the two areas that encompass the rigorous course measures, course completion measures. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Wonderful. Dr. Mariano, please identify yourself to the record.
Members of state. I'm here as you know, not actually representing the university, but simply as someone who's tracked this, and I probably don't live far enough away to be an expert because I do live in St. Paul, but I will give you some information on why these are important. So if you look, first of all, at the two measures of rigorous coursework or preparation for post-secondary, the first one there has to do with course taking, and the intent there is to make that course taking that would give kids choices. That is, if I meet individually, I meet number one, it would mean I'm prepared to go to any of the public 4 years, which also means that I could go other places, to a vocational school, community college, career education. I would have a full range of options. And insofar as kids may change their trajectories, we think it's important to specify this is the level you'd need to have all kinds of choices for post-secondary education. With respect to why that's particularly important, there's a report from Cliff Adelman. There's a first report called Toolbox, a second a report called Toolbox Revisited that's shown that rigorous course taking is probably the most important predictor of actually successfully completing college. That they have a pretty high benchmark that goes beyond Algebra 2, for example, in math and has other 4 years of English, basically, and other requirements like that. And they suggest that in that group, you can actually get a 95% college graduation rate. So we think this is an important measure because what it does is it says, okay, for parents, if my child goes to the school, what's the likelihood he's going to come out or she's going to come out fully prepared for choices in post-secondary education, that they'll have the options of 4-year or 2-year schools. Second one there has to do with taking college-level classes. And, again, it's, the measure would be the percent of students from a high school who graduate who have completed at least one class at the level where it could get them college-level credits. So that would include advanced placement, international baccalaureate, concurrent enrollment, which we call college in the schools at the university, post-secondary enrollment options. And there's work that's been done by the College Board that shows that students that take even one AP course have a much higher chance of graduating from college than do others. Just as a sidebar, one of the things we've been trying to do at the university is to try to get more students taking those college-level courses because it helps us at time of entry, and we also know that rigorous course taking is a really important predictor for us of who's going to get into the University of Minnesota. That if counselors are saying to kids, take easy courses, get good grades, it's the wrong message. The message should be take as hard a course as you can, get yourself ready, ideally take a college course so that you know exactly what the expectations are of that course. So these two measures are measures that look at the percentage of students from a particular high school who have, first of all, gotten themselves fully ready for college in terms of coursework, and then who've taken at least one course that is at a college level or course at which they can get college credit. Questions on that before I turn to the second part? Representative Reiner, do you want to add anything?
Are there questions from members on that on this measure?
Representative Reiner has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Mariayama. You know, this is good and well that we're including this rigorous coursework measure, but during my years of teaching, though I was a very tough teacher and required rigor of my students, it was always based on what my expectation was that I set for them and whether or not they reached it. And you know, I had to take each individual student in each of my English courses, for example, and, you know, set a standard for each of them based on how they came to me. And the course title made no difference. I mean, I taught honors courses and I taught otherwise. But the quality of the teaching is essential. And I think this is missing the point if we just refer to rigorous coursework, because in visiting with a student last night, a senior at St. Thomas, she was reviewing for me what she went through in high school and now in college, and she earmarked for me, you know, who was a quality teacher in high school and how, you know, she has missed the boat in many of her courses, and she's in bioscience by, you know, not having had necessarily a top-notch teacher in every one of her courses. So, you know, help me out there so that we can bring something together here that for parents is going to hit the mark, and that's they want quality teaching going on and insurance that their children learn at the rigor that's set for that student.
Dr. Mariano.
Yes. Senator and Representative Mariano from the city. I think you're touching on a really important issue, but I think it's a different issue than the issue that we have here, that this is simply looking, and in particular the courses that are in this rigorous course taking ones that have pretty clear and specified curricula, and that basically the quality of teaching is a second issue that just, you're right, this doesn't get at, and we hope that in all cases that students have instructors who adequately cover the content and give them the opportunities that they don't want. This sort of touches more on in the world we live in now, in the information age, work ready means college ready, and that we need all students to be ready to have the skills that will get them the equivalent of entering college. And so what this is really focused on is we don't want kids to set a different bar, or we want at least the schools to know that these are standards that we'd like students to fulfill, because it gets them ready in terms of it gives them exposure to rigorous content. Whether that content is taught well or not is another issue, but it gives them exposure to that content, and that by completing these patterns of coursework, it does give them a full set of choices and should prepare them for work as well as for college.
Representative Breiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do really understand the issue that you're raising, Representative Erickson, and we don't want putting this measure forward to be perceived as adequate for a complete evaluation of the rigor of any given curriculum in any given school at any given point in time. That's not its goal. But what we know from research is that these types of courses are predictive of post-secondary success. So we're not commenting on the rigor of any particular course, but we're just taking what the data has shown us over a long period of time, and that's that these courses taken by a large number of students predict a higher percentage of success among those students than among students who haven't taken those courses. And I don't know if you'd like to comment further on that, Dr. Mariama.
And Dr. Mariama, you also have other testimonies.
Right. Yeah. This is Section 8 on page 13. The intent of the section there is to recognize that when students enter high school, that there may be differences in their level of readiness for high school content and rigorous content. And so the intent there is to simply say, for schools like a particular school, what is the projected percentage of students who would fulfill those rigorous coursework requirements? So if you have a school that has students who always are coming in starting geometry, algebra 2, then you're in a somewhat different place than a school that has a lot of students who are barely at the algebra 1 level. And so the goal there would be to be able to adjust for school differences to give a school a sense of how am I doing compared to similar schools. So it's a way to construct a similar school comparison that would allow schools to say, okay, this is how I look compared to where what you might expect from me given where my students are starting high school.
Thank you. Representative Harris?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Mariama, on page 13 in Section 8, are you referring to the same data system then that you referred to earlier in your first part of the presentation?
Dr. Mariama.
Representative Erickson. The information for this would be contained in the MARS information and the state test information. So this information should be in the state databases already.
Mr. Chair, follow up. I might be confused here. But this is not the same data that you're referring to on page 9, the rigorous coursework measure.
Dr. Maria.
Yes, no?
Representative Erickson, no. The other information would be information that would be collected. The schools would be providing it about students that fulfill that. And this is the information that you wouldn't need to go to the schools to get.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thank you for clarifying that, Representative Harris. Are there any further questions for Dr. Mariam? Representative Dudlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly, not so much a question, but a point of interest on a couple of places, if you'll bear with me, on page 13, line 13.9, and again on line 13.24. There will be a lot more discussion on this bill, I'm sure, but I am interested, and I consider this a friendly suggestion, that we include parents intentionally on these lists of stakeholders. I think that perspective, when we're talking about evaluating and assessing students, especially to make it useful and pertinent, would be a great thing to do. I'm wondering if I could make that as a formal suggestion. There's one other spot on page 1418 where that would be appropriate as well, but I'm wondering what Representative Breinert would have to say about that.
Representative Breinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gottwald, I'm very open to doing that. Certainly, the broader the stakeholder group, I understand the role of the parents, obviously, in that. And we did, in our process, hear from a number of parent organizations. So, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dunlop. A follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if I could, given that, make an oral amendment or two here, if that's appropriate now, or should we hold off on doing that? The amendment would be on line 13.9, superintendents, school principals, school teachers, and parents to examine the actual statewide performance of students. So it's simply inserting "and parents" and deleting the word "and" before "school teachers."
Representative Biner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, I would accept that amendment. And there probably are some other places we actually, so I'm going to not only accept that, but I guess suggest that people vote on behalf of it since you have to pass it here. But I will go through this bill more carefully and see that there's consistency in that proposal.
Members, why don't we go ahead and adopt that amendment, and then perhaps Representative Gottwald and Representative Biner can afterwards, assuming the bill moves forward, continue to look at it. I suspect there may be other places in which that might be needed to be consistent. Representative Gutwell.
Mr. Chair, I had actually identified two other places I was going to include in this amendment, but perhaps that is the better approach, is to simply suggest them afterwards.
I really would appreciate that. And it would make it a little easier to make sure we don't create unintended consequences. So why don't we go ahead and move with your amendment. Representative Gutwell moves to amend House File 3329 on line 1, or I'm 13.9, to insert "and parents" after the word "teachers" and to delete the word "and" in front of "school" on that line. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevailed. Thank you, Representative Gutwald. We have one other question, I think, was it Representative Erdoff?
No.
What word law? I'm sorry.
I know we look
like. Yeah, quit sitting by each other, will
you?
You're better than you. And then they wear the same glasses on top of it. Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just look at Section 8. It seems like that might be an unfunded mandate to the department. Is that something that maybe the university could do some research project from a
Representative Briner, and I want to direct folks to the following page on line 1411, where the effective date of this section would be July 1st, 2011. And I think the frame, as I understand it, Representative Briner, is that you're asking the department to, with some guidance here, to develop okay, Ms. Larson tells me that the amendment that we adopted changes the language from developing to propose, and so you've got a process where, or you've got a dynamic here where you're directing the department to propose facts, and the outdate gives us time then to consider the fiscal impacts of implementation if we so move forward with that implementation. Do I have that right, Representative Briner?
Well, yes, you've done it, Mr. Chair. You've done a good job of starting that explanation. I would say there's two components to this, Representative Wardlaw, and the initial one is constituting a group of experts to look at developing a model. That's very similar to the kind of work we've been doing through the whole interim. And yes, it does depend on some volunteer labor, in the sense that we've had a lot of experts who have given their time to this kind of process. This paragraph A from 1321 on is an extension of that process, in order to develop a predictive model. So that's a matter of some meeting time. So there is some time involved in that, but I think it's in the purview of what the department's goals would be independently of that. The second paragraph B of Section 8, we did switch from develop to propose precisely so that this legislation would indicate the important role of the expanded data system without getting the policy component bogged down in the funding component. But you'll be hearing Representative Winkler's bill later today, and his bill actually completely addresses the data system needs that this bill takes for granted. So,
thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wardlaw, for catching that. Dr. Mariama, are we good?
Thank you.
Thank you.
No, unless there are other questions, Mr. Mariano.
All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Mariano, for being here with us today. And take care of that finger, will you?
And I would like to say to the committee members that Dr. Mariyama would probably make himself available by email if there are questions of content in terms to the rigorous course measure model, so, and other experts that he's worked with in this process. So next we'll be moving to the heart of the matter here, and that's the growth-based value-added model. And Dr. Heistad has led the group of expert assessment directors who have worked to propose this model. So I'll let Dr. Heistad introduce himself if there are no further questions at the moment.
Welcome, Dr. Heistad.
Thank you, Chairperson Mariani, committee members. My name is Dave Heistad. I'm the Executive Director for Research Evaluation Assessment for Minneapolis Schools, and have served in that capacity for the past 10 years. In Minneapolis schools, we've used the growth model for the past 10 years as part of a multiple measure system, and we've used growth norms, and we've found it a very good driver of not only our accountability system, but also to identify best practices. What I hope to accomplish with this brief testimony is to really highlight the benefits of what I see in this legislation to the state, the same kind of benefits that we've experienced in Minneapolis. And now there are over 300 districts in the state of Minnesota that are using some form of growth-based model and growth norms. So it is something that's quite familiar with a lot of different school districts across the state. But I think it will have great benefits to the state as a whole. There is a handout which includes the PowerPoint slides that will be shown behind me. The three main areas that I think this legislation contributes are in the area of multiple measures, equity, and school improvement. The No Child Left Behind system that is in place right now is a component of the school report card. And as we was discussed at the beginning of this hearing, this proposal keeps all of that in place and then extends and adds components for indicators to make it more of a multiple measure system. The biggest area that we're adding is growth. That we're not only looking at the high standards and what percentage of the students achieve the high standards, but we're looking at how much progress takes place for an individual child throughout the course of the year within a classroom in the state of Minnesota. So we report on the high standards in the proposed report card, but then we add how much growth is taking place for each student compared to the growth norms that are established. This provides a much more dynamic system for looking at schools. We can see a continuum of percentage of students that are high on the standards and high on growth measures, but we may find some schools that are high on the standards and not making as much growth. Likewise, with students with schools that are classified as not meeting the No Child Left Behind, there are some schools that are low on standards and low on growth, but also there are some schools that are low on the standards but making great growth. And this will enable us to distinguish schools that that really are making great progress. The next section is equity. We are proposing a very rigorous standard for growth. That we have high growth expectations for all students as well.
Under the No Child Left Behind system, students that are above the standard are pretty much left out of the accountability system. There's no expectation for how much growth those students should make, other than they shouldn't decrease their performance significantly, so they go from proficient to partially proficient. The model that we're proposing has high growth expectations for students that are already above the standard, as well as the students that are currently functioning below the standard. We can give credit to schools for making progress towards the standard. Students don't necessarily have to jump over the bar to get credit. So this system is much more equitable than the system with just the No Child Left Behind indicators in it. And finally, the third area is for school improvement. In Minneapolis, we've really benefited from doing studies of teachers in schools with BPIs that are making exceptional growth. Now, not all those students are going over the bar, but we'll find groups of teachers working together that are making exceptional progress in math, for example. We did a study of kindergarten teachers recently and found that there are kindergarten teachers that are showing exceptional growth for students in poverty, students of color who tend not to make as much growth. And so this would enable the state to do similar kinds of analyses, to find those outstate rural schools that are beating the odds, suburban and urban sites. So those are the three main areas that I see great benefit. That we would be looking to accelerate growth for all students. I'm calling this an effort-based accountability system. It's something that we're talking about a lot in Minneapolis, is that the old system of education really looked at aptitudes and said, well, let's test children to find out what their aptitude is, and we really expect those children that have high aptitude to show great progress, but there was, I think, at some time, quite a bit of tracking going on where there were kids that we didn't assume were going to be able to meet the standards. Well, this approach, looking at growth at all levels, really is an effort-based accountability system where when we make changes in our educational program, we look for indicators to pick up the growth that's responsible, or that is the effect of our interventions. For example, in Minneapolis, we are setting a target to have all students achieve Algebra 1 by 8th grade. It's a very high standard, but we can keep track of the mathematics progress of students from the end of 7th grade to the end of 8th grade, and find out if the new textbook adoption that we're going to do this year and the training for teachers and the homework packages for parents are really producing the kind of achievement growth that we want to see. And that's what we'll be able to do at a state level. We'll be able to find districts and schools that have made changes in their instructional approach and thereby increase progress. The figure here really just shows that we're looking at two dimensions now. So the achievement dimension in terms of being high on the standards is still in place. What we're adding is the growth component. And in the lower left-hand quadrant of this matrix, you can see there are schools that are low on the standards and also not showing very much growth. Those are the schools we've identified in Minneapolis that need most intensive and immediate assistance. Those are schools that have been fresh started or are on the verge of some kind of reconstitution unless dramatic changes are made. On the other hand, we have schools in the bottom right quadrant that really, they're not yet there in terms of No Child Left Behind, but they're making great growth. So we're able to distinguish those schools, and the schools that you never hear about are the schools in the top left-hand quadrant where they're hitting the targets on No Child Left Behind, but when you look at their growth, it's really minimal. And we identified three schools in Minneapolis that really are hitting the AYP targets, but they're not showing the kind of growth that other schools are, and so they need to accelerate their progress as well. So this is the growth model. the state has done, the Department of Education has done immense work over the last couple of years to develop the prerequisites for this growth model. So they have developed a growth scale, which is similar to height and weight. When you go to a doctor's office, you want to check how much improvement your child has made versus the norms that are available. Sometimes the doctor has a chart on the wall that you can check against. This is the prerequisite that you have to have a growth scale that cuts across grade levels. And this vertically linked scale score, which the department is calling the progress score, is in place now. And our individual student reports the parents are going to get this year will have a line showing where the standards are and a line showing how much progress your individual child has made. And you can see if you're above the standards, if you're still making progress, if you're below the standards, are you going to be able to catch up to the standards in a couple of years. So this work is already in place. What we've added is an analysis of the typical performance from 2006 to 2007. And those are our growth norms. And we first, we had a committee of experts from this Minnesota Assessment Group look at different ways to analyze these growth norms. Initially, we had proposed a very simple model where a student would either be above the state average or below the state average. And we call that the dichotomous model, where it's either or. Now, after analysis and working with the Department of Education, we're proposing what we call a trichotomous model, which will identify students as being below the growth expectations, at the growth norms, and above. And what we found is that for students to go from partially proficient to proficient, or from below proficient to proficient, they really need to make greater growth than we're seeing currently in Minnesota. So the difference is that we're going to be proposing a trichotomous model and looking at the state norms from the past 2 years and classifying a third of the students as below expectation, below the state norm. A third of the students would be at the state norm, and a third would be above. So in order to make this accelerated progress, you have to have a larger percentage of your students making above state norm growth. And I'll show you a couple examples here. This would be an example of math growth for a district and a school versus the state norm. Now, What I'm proposing here is to report out the percentage of students that are at the state norm, but to emphasize the percentage of students that are above the state norm. You can see the state, as I indicated, 33% would be above, 33% would be at. Here's a district, however, which has too few students making above state norm growth. Only 20% of the students are above the norm growth. 40% are making the state norm, but this is a district that needs to get more students into that accelerated status. Now, there's a school within that district where 45% of the students are making this accelerated growth. Now, this would be a school that I'd want to go into to investigate what kinds of strategies they have for mathematics that are accelerating growth for this many students. So this is the profile we'd like to see. Eventually, we'd like to see all the students in the state making accelerated growth. What we'll be able to track is continuous progress across time. So this is one type of reporting that you might see on the report card. Then we would drill down to look at the growth for subgroups. And we know that there are 9 subgroups with adequate yearly progress reporting for No Child Left Behind. We propose to add a 10th subgroup, and that would be gender. The state does not need to report gender for No Child Left Behind purposes, but we found that there are some cases where there are gender gaps. And so we'd like to propose that as well. So you would look at the percentage of students that are making accelerated growth for students receiving free and reduced price lunch, students who are English language learners, for the various student groups of color. And what we see in the state is we are making great progress with middle-class white students, but we have very deficient progress for these diverse groups of students. And so we would have a challenge to really narrow the gap by monitoring this growth. And so the second level, if you drill down, might be a graph like this for students receiving free and reduced price lunch. When I analyzed one of the grade levels for the state norms, I found that 28% of the students were making accelerated growth. It's less than the 33% overall percent. We had a district where 34% of the students were making accelerated growth. So they were doing a little bit better than the state. And then here's that school again. For their kids of poverty, they were having 55% of the kids in poverty making accelerated growth. So not only was the school in general showing great progress for math, but for those kids in poverty who tend to make lower growth in general, so this would be one of those DCI schools. So this is an example of what the reporting would look like. It would emphasize accelerating the growth and looking at this red portion of the graph. And finally, there are questions about the value-added language. And as Representative Brainard has mentioned, there are different definitions throughout the country, and we want to have the definitions that fit Minnesota best. The current definitions have some appeal to me because they're very broad. The current definition of value-added says that the student has a baseline of growth for previous years, and you're going to compare the growth for this past period of time to that baseline, and that growth is value-added. Now, there are other definitions that say you need to distinguish the amount of growth that's that the teacher is responsible for compared to the parents. And so there are some models that involve mother's education as one of the biggest predictors of achievement. If you factor in mother's education and the income of the family, you could distinguish what part is due to the teacher and what part is related to family background. So there are more sophisticated models that go beyond just the baseline versus the current performance. They would be included in this current definition. Also, the model that Sanders in Tennessee has developed is a very complex model. It would also fall under this definition. For Sanders, he uses at least 3 or 4 years of baseline data, and he also looks at performance on science tests and on reading tests when he's predicting math achievement. So his model has lots of factors in it. That also would be included in the current definition. The key factor is that this simple growth measure, just how much gain did the student make from last year to this year, is the simplest form of value-added. We think it's the easiest form for parents to understand. The benefit of these more complex models is that they have more precision and accuracy, and you can distinguish different effects. Maybe you could figure out how much the principal is adding value to the school. But the problem is they're a little bit more difficult for parents in the community to understand. So our committee recommended the simple model, which is the growth model that's presented here. Mentor in value-added from University of Wisconsin, Rob Meyer, says that you always use the simplest model you possibly can, the law of parsimony, unless it's wrong. And so if we find that the simplest model is not as equitable as another kind of model, I think this legislation allows us to go beyond the current model if we want to use a more sophisticated model in the future. Finally, I added one graph that isn't in your a PowerPoint presentation when I got the comments from the Department of Education last night. And it's simply to show you how rigorous the trichotomous model is compared to the dichotomous model. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but the red diamond line here is the current state standard for proficiency on this vertically linked scale score. So you can see it starts at about 3,500 and it goes up to about 3,993. That's the point that you have to be at to be proficient. Now, the point down at 3,200 is a point that does not meet proficiency. It's not even partially proficient. And with the consultation with Assistant Commissioner Hovannis Latsala, we both had this this question about what if you made old typical state growth every year, would you catch up to the standards if you were below the standards to start with? And it turns out you wouldn't. You can see this blue line here. You would relatively stay parallel to that red line, which indicates proficiency. So kids would not accelerate and get up to the proficiency standards unless they made more than typical growth. And so the brown line here shows applying this trichotomous model and saying if you made more than a year's growth every year, would you catch up to the standards? And the answer is yes. So this confirmed the suspicions that the department had and that I had that just making typical growth, average growth, wouldn't be enough. And that's why we're emphasizing the making more than a year's growth in the report card system. I hope that's sufficient explanation of the rigor. I think this proposes a very rigorous growth standard, and I'd be glad to take any questions the committee has.
Thank you, Dr. Heisted. You covered a lot of ground in a short period of time, and I appreciate your work with that. And we have had discussions with the department, and I also want to thank you for your openness in working with folks at the Department of Education in regards to the concern that that if we just stop with any kind of a measurement that expected typical growth, that may lead the public to not focus on the need for a more rigorous expectation of growth. I think that's a real key issue that the department has raised with us, and I think I don't think, Representative Reiner, that it's yours or the work group's intent to create any kind of a model or measure that would lead the public to believe that typical growth, as we're capturing it in and of itself, is going to get the job done in the case of certain students in schools. So I appreciate the sort of second, third, and fourth draft of this model that you've all been working through. Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could comment on that, I would say that the intent is, we need to remember that NCLB data is existing in a parallel fashion here, and that these bodies of data speak to one another. They're not meant to replace one another. They're meant to be complementary. So you have the proficiency data, which tells us about that higher standard, about how students are doing in relation to that standard. And then the growth model is another view that extends our vision of our students' performance and gives us another way to look at performance in schools. And so how our schools are doing, and as Dr. Heisted has so ably indicated, helps us to identify best practice in a way that we can carry forward areas we might never have identified with only the NCLB data. So I think we have to see these bodies of data as complementary.
And Dr. Heisted, my understanding is that you can use the tool to even drill down to be able to identify effective classrooms. Is that correct? We're not just leaving it at the sort of generic, mm-hmm. general, here's a school that's making more than typical growth, but perhaps through the classroom within that school with mm-hmm. that grade level with this particular mm-hmm. subgroup of students that that is producing good growth that we should look at in terms mm-hmm. of understanding the practices that are being used there. Is that correct? That allows
yes.
to do that kind of fine...
Chairperson Mariani, the model that we're recommending would look at teacher teams working together to find out what kinds of best practices are taking place. You can go to a more level of detail if you have teachers report the percentage of time that they have each student in reading and math. Now that's the approach that Dr. Sanders does, and so if there are four reading teachers, each teacher has to say what percentage they have, Mary, for reading. That is a large data burden, and at this time our committee, subcommittee, recommended going to the grade level team level rather than going to the individual mm-hmm. teacher.
Okay.
But the model can be extended down to teacher level. When I've done BPI studies, for example, the kindergarten teachers, I found it's easy in kindergarten because all the teachers teach their own kids for literacy. So I didn't have to go in and find out what percent. And there are specialists, you know, some specialist ELL, special ed teachers, but in general it was easier. When you get to the middle school level, or actually in elementary now, where kids will switch for reading and math, it's more of a data burden to find out exactly what percentage of time each child had each teacher. So it is possible, but what we recommended out of the subcommittee was to do it at the grade level team, and then find the teams that are working together to produce this tremendous math progress or reading progress.
Thank you, Dr. Heistad. We've got several members that have questions, so I'm going to open that up, and I want to try to get at least one other witness in, and I suspect we're probably going to run over time, so we'll be back here later on this evening. Representative Detmer and Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Beimert, how closely did you work with the Department of Education on developing this bill, and what is their position and on this bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, we will hear from the Department, I'm sure, in the course of the testimony, and I have the same letter you do with the Department's concerns. We have been very open in the process from the minute we formed our working group, inviting the Department to dialogue with us, observe the process, attend our public hearings, engage us in the discussion. And we have had, since the first draft of the bill, we've met with the Department a couple of times and have attempted to address some minor concerns. We haven't gotten to the major issue around the value-added model, simply because we've asked for language, and that hasn't happened yet, but I believe it will. I think our intention in the value-added piece is to work cooperatively to extend that language to be more encompassing of that fuller value-added piece. But when we went through this bill, we were trying to create, really you'll see that we reviewed existing statute, and a great deal of what's in this bill is existing statute, but we simply updated it with these elements that affected these new components. But anyway, our intention is to work with the Department, and we have been open in our process in working with the Department.
I'll follow up, Mr. Chairman. And when you're working with the Department, what do you think is their biggest concern?
Representative Bryant.
Well, I'll do my best to represent that, but I think you will hear from the Department themselves. I believe the value-added component is their biggest concern, although we did spend quite a bit of time. I'm sorry, I didn't say Mr. Chair and Representative Depp. The biggest concern, well, one of the concerns had been how robust the growth model was and whether it addressed student expectations or standards at an adequate level. And that was the discussion we've had over some meetings with Dr. Heistad about the dichotomous model versus the trichotomous model. So are you expecting simple 1 year's growth or that accelerated growth? There was concern about whether the model, whether in focusing on growth, we would diffuse our focus on proficiency. And that absolutely is not the intention of this model. But that was a concern of the department, and we have done our best to address that concern.
And we will be hearing from the department a little bit later on this. And I think it is fair to characterize that there's been a healthy tension with the department in this discussion. But I think part of that, a lot of that has to do with sort of the difficulty of what we're, both the department and the working group has been working on. And I think there's, some level sort of, making sure we're using the same language. We've had lots of discussions around, what does value added mean? I've certainly have learned a lot, but I think the spirit of the engagement has been very respectful and accommodating both on the part of the department and Representative Brainerd and the working group.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Detmer. Representative Dietrich and Representative Brainerd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Heistad, I have a little bit more specific question about how you use this data since your school district has been working with it. And I'm referring to the bar chart where you had the example of math growth for a district, et cetera. And when I look at that, I see, okay, my child is in that school district or a particular school district does the growth testing, and they say, okay, in our district, 60% of the people are at proficient or at or above norm growth. So that's fine, and people kind of say, well, 60% isn't maybe where I'd like it to be, but room for improvement, but I'm sure they're working on that. And then this is probably for Representative Reinhart also, at where do we start setting goals? And you specifically mm-hmm. said you have mm-hmm. a goal. You want all students to mm-hmm. be at accelerated.
Mm-hmm.
But where are those goals set? Where are they published? And mm-hmm. then how is anybody held accountable to that growth?
Dr. Heist,
Mr. Chair and Representative Dietrich, in Minneapolis, we have had a long experience with our growth norms. These are national growth norms from NWA. And after a couple of years, we were able to set standards in terms of 70% of students making accelerated growth, getting the highest number of points in our accountability system, et cetera. At this point, we would yet need to, convene a representative committee, including parents, to look at the growth data if we were to set standards for excellence, if we wanted something like a blue ribbon award or something like that. In your example, we know that the state, 67% of the students make a year's growth or more than a year's growth. So I would say that's not acceptable. So the first standard is you have to at least get the state average. And especially, and if I was a parent, I would look at the subgroups that my child might be in. If I was a non-English speaker and my child is in a school with a Hispanic program, how are the Hispanic students doing in terms of their rate of growth? So you want to get down to some detail. But I think we will be able to see, at what point do we have these truly exceptional schools. When I did the BCI study in kindergarten, we looked at the top 10 teachers in the district. We went out, interviewed, and did videotapes with those teachers. You could do it that way and just say, okay, we're going to look at the top so many schools, or you could actually establish what percentage of students need to be making accelerated growth for us to go out, investigate, and acknowledge the tremendous growth. But we don't know that a priori. We have to actually collect the data and then do that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Chair, could I just comment on that?
I'm sorry, Representative Brainerd.
Representative Dietrich, I appreciate your question, and I would say that there's a long-range goal for the kind of accountability you're talking about, but my own take on this, and I certainly would take Dr. Heitz's comment, is I believe we need to be cautious about approaching how the accountability piece fits here, because we're just beginning to use this growth model. So the first goal is to look at the data and to use the model in a way that simply reflects what is occurring, and not be too quick to set the standard for accountability without a greater knowledge of the data and the movement in the data. We're already working under some pretty heavy accountability burdens as school districts, and I want to see, I guess I would like us to move in a more complementary, supportive fashion, so this data is used to identify best practice and promote best practice in the school improvement plan and the school performance assessment, and move carefully to the level of accountability you're talking about.
Thank you.
Mrs. Pesarelli.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to compliment Representative Reinert and Mr. Heistad and everybody, Mr. Chair, who has worked on this. I think it is a significant major legislative initiative, and I'm very proud that our legislature is working on this. I think it's essential to tie this in. We're tying this in to the soon-to-be-released Education Finance Reform Task Force, and so this is a crucial piece of it that we get this right, and so I'm glad that you're working on it so carefully. I know you've worked with everyone under the sun, including the Department of Education and the Commissioner, so I'm a little bit perplexed at the harsh tone of the Commissioner's letter that we find on our desk today. I have always thought that she was a supporter of value-added growth measures, and so to imply that somehow going to this would give us a false sense of security regarding the performance of our schools, you know, to me that doesn't square with earlier things I've heard out of our commissioner. And so I'm glad you will continue working on this. The last thing I want to say, Mr. Chair, is I have a granddaughter now in Washington, D.C., where they have such a variety of schools that she's now trying to figure out which school to get on the waiting list for, which schools to get on the waiting list for, and that's a whole other story. But I do wish she had this sort of meaningful evaluation to guide her instead of, you know, using all her, she's a journalist, she has a multitude of networks, but still, she doesn't have any uniform way to really meaningfully evaluate the schools. And I think we need this in Minnesota for our students, and I wish they had that in D.C. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Growling. And I think it is important, and that's why I asked those questions at the very beginning, that we're able to distinguish, and Dr. Hartley, I think you testified to this very openly right up front, you know, that we're talking about, we're not talking about an either-or situation here, that you're talking about making sure that we stay focused on our standards and that we report out how we're doing relative to that, at the same time that we're developing a tool that allows us to look at growth as a way to identify practices that exist within the state that can get us to a better understanding of how we can get to those standards. And that as you dug deeper in your work, you discovered that what we really needed to do was to focus on more than typical growth. So, you know, kind of laying that issue aside to get us increasingly focused on accelerated growth, particularly with particular student groups. So I think it's really important that we continue to understand the intent and the focus of this, the development of this tool. And Representative Reinert, you said repeatedly, you're looking at a complementary supportive instrument here, to argument here, to our current statewide accountability system. Representative Erickson and Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, Representative Greiling, I think that our former colleague, former Representative Segrin, does not deliver harsh comments. I mean, her tone is never harsh, and I think we both know that. She has a concern, just like any agency does. I mean, all the agencies who testify in front of us bring forth concerns. But I think she wants to work with all of us, and I appreciate her forthrightness in that way. But Dr. Heisted, you're a genius at this, so I can't begin to thank you for your expertise in this area. But will you justify for me your definition of value-added?
Dr. Heisted, you're being set up when someone calls you a genius. That's a high standard.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out, Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson. There are many experts in this area that know much more than I do. This particular definition was arrived at by Professor Davison at the University of Minnesota, who was one of my mentors. I think the idea was to have the most general definition that would apply to all the various family of value-added formulas that exist. There are almost as many formulas as there are statisticians. So this would be the most general, that it would include the growth-based value-added, the very simple model that we're proposing, and the most complex models. And I've used the complex models in Minneapolis, where all of the variables that we have in our database practically are used to project how students would typically do, and then see how. But I've had trouble. I've got two indicators in our a multi-indicator system that are these sophisticated value-added indicators. I like them a lot, but I have a difficulty explaining to the general public exactly what it means to have a coefficient of 3.37. It's really hard to communicate. So you gain some precision by the more complex models, but you lose communication power. And that's why our team decided the simplest model is best. And all the models use previous data to create a baseline. And the simplest model, the baseline, is just how much growth you made as a state over the last 2 years. The more complex model might be how much the student has made in growth, factoring in their science scores and their social studies scores and the poverty level of the family and whether the student is receiving special ed, etc. So they're very complex models, but all of them would fall under this simple definition that Dr. Davison put together. And I think rather than trying to distinguish the gain and growth model from other kinds of value-add models, there's a benefit to having all of those models nested underneath this very simple definition.
Mr. Chair, just my opinion is that it's deceptive. Value-added, and of course I've studied under Dr. Sanders, so I have a preset, idea of what value-added should be. But I think in the end, if we stay with your definition, we're going to be deceiving parents. So I'll move to the fact that you're using Minneapolis. Is this, and I'm all for this statewide accountability. This is my bailiwick. So I really appreciate what you and Representative Ryan are attempting to do. But is this going to be workable for our small school districts across Minnesota?
Representative Erickson, I think your question is a good question, but I would caution us not to ascribe motives of deception to any of our testifiers on either side of this issue. But Dr. Heisted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erickson, I think this model will work wherever we have at least 20 students that have a pretest and a post-test score. We're recommending that the cell size be similar to what No Child Left Behind is. If you have less than 20 children in a grade level or in the school, the measurement error would be so great that it could be misleading to report out gain scores.
for most of the school districts in the state, that wouldn't be a problem. And I think it would be a very simple model that that many districts don't have a research director, an evaluation unit, etc. But they will understand gain, and they will be able to relate it to other types of gain measures, similar to weight or height. And it'll be, I think, accessible to the community as well. So I think it will actually have more transparency, and it will be less deceptive, if you want to use that word, than other models that that are more like a black box, that you really don't know how you came up with the numbers that you have.
Mr. Chair?
Perfect.
Yeah, and Dr. Heistad, I agree that it's going to show growth, but I still can't understand the value added, but I'll move on from there. Representative Brainerd, you have a fiscal note for this. I know it's going on to K-12, but have you asked for one yet?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, yes, we have requested the fiscal note.
I'm going to ask at this point that Assistant Commissioner Hovenitz Lashville, I think you're testifying on behalf of the department, if you can come forward.
Mr. Chair, I'm also concerned about Dr. Michelle Walker from St. Paul Schools, who's here, and has her timeline, too, so if we can
thank you.
Be sensitive to that.
Thank you, Representative Brainerd. Assistant Commissioner. I don't know. Assistant Commissioner, unfortunately, we're running a little bit short here, and so if you can be concise with your comments, I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
And it's let me say, members, it's been good, a pleasure working with the Assistant Commissioner. She's also been part of these discussions, particularly in the latter part of the development of this bill. So. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to testify on behalf of the commissioner's concerns this morning. I will keep my remarks brief.
And Assistant Commissioner, if you could identify yourself on the record, I appreciate it.
Assistant Commissioner Christy Hovanitz-Lashawa.
Thank you.
Just to provide one point of clarification, MDE has now been involved in the process, but we were first presented the gross model once the work of the district committee was completed in a public meeting, and were drawn into the discussions once the draft legislation was actually introduced. So we are very happy to be part of this group and working with Representative Brainerd and Representative Mariani and Senator Rummel and Dr. Heistad on moving forward with this legislation. We're grateful that you all have been receptive to some of our concerns that we've initially had with regard to the definitions. We would like to be able to see that value added is reflecting some of the nationally recognized definitions that have been longstanding in this field and that we maintain those. One of the other major concerns, as Representative Brainerd had addressed, was the high standards, maintaining a gross model that is consistent with the high standards and expectations of the department. The department does strongly support growth models and value-added models, as demonstrated a few weeks ago, our work with the districts to submit a growth model for purposes of use in the adequate yearly progress system under the U.S. Department of Education's No Child Left Behind Act. We do want to be sure, though, that any additional growth models that we add are consistent with these high expectations and are consistent with the messages that we're sending about student achievement in our state. As Dr. Heistad pointed out in the PowerPoint presentation, the additional slide that he demonstrated, students that continuously make state-normed growth will not ever end up being proficient, and that was one of the main concerns of the department, is that we had a standard that assumed that students would achieve a proficient mark rather than consistently making state-normed growth, which did not get them to a proficient mark. So we're happy to see that we've moved to a trichotomous model that has a higher standard for students in achieving those proficiency standards. We also are looking at the limited authority in Section 3, Subdivisions 1, 4, and Section 4, Subdivision 1, to look at the Commissioner of Education to establish accountability of systems that are related to policy and process. If she's going to be responsible and accountable for these systems, we want her to be able to have the decision-making ability as well. Another one of the major concerns was the striking of the value-added language that, as a reminder, was implemented in 2004 by a bipartisan group, that we are very open to technical changes in the statute, but we do want to maintain that these substantive concepts in the value-added language that is currently stricken remains. And I know we've had a discussion about that and have agreed to talk in a working group to maintain a lot of those components of the legislation. And then the third main concern was the unfunded mandates that were presented into the bill. The department has been required in this bill to provide a lot of additional data collection and reporting, including a common course code system, and also to provide technical assistance and intervention for state schools not meeting state norms growth. Currently, we're responsible to do technical assistance for those not meeting federal requirements and have been funded by the No Child Left Behind Act to do so. This adds state norm growth to those requirements as well, but no additional funding has been maintained. And then just the last component was the University of Minnesota Research Project, again, had some unfunded mandates, and it seems like this would be a project that could be done without the necessary legislation in this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. Any questions? Let's pick up on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, I think one of the concerns I have is, as these issues are being brought forward, it would be interesting to find out from Representative Brinert and perhaps others, how are these being addressed? Have all these been resolved? Are they incorporated? Will they be incorporated? How are we addressing all these?
Senator Brinert.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, we have begun to work on some of the minor pieces. We don't have a consensus on how to resolve the value-added dilemma, but we have agreed to engage the discussion. I think you heard Dr. Heifetz express a bit different perspective on how to define value-added and how the model we're using fits into that context. My own goal would be to come to a resolution that includes the perspective we're advancing but honors the previous work of the legislature in terms of extending that to a more robust model. So I'd like to come to some compromises on that language. There are certainly some other issues. One of the issues, it's a small one, but it's significant. The authoritative language issue, that language is not language that we put into legislation. If you read carefully the sections being referred to, the musts that are in there were already in legislation. We did not add those. So the authoritative language is currently exists in statute. It was not added by us.
Thank you. Quickly, Representative.
Mr. Chair, quickly. I guess I would have more comfort, and perhaps other members here would have more comfort in moving this bill forward if we knew that these things were being resolved, and perhaps the Assistant Commissioner could comment on the progress here as well.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative.
All right, we can...
I guess I don't know how else to affirm. In my original testimony, I tried to make clear the areas that we were open to, and we have invited both oral and written comment from the department, and we have invited them to, I wouldn't say we've invited them to sit down with us every step of the way, but every public hearing we've invited their participation. I am willing to sit down with whomever from the department is the appropriate negotiator to work on the language, and I think Dr. Heifetz would work with us, particularly on the value-added pieces. So,
Representative Brinert, I can certainly attest to that spirit because it matches mine as well, and I'm remembering that very first year when we invited the commissioner to come and comment at the beginning of the work group, and so we had that presence from the very beginning. I want to move us along. I think there's one person from the public that wishes to testify on this. It's going to have to be very quickly done. Mr. Bartholomew, is that correct? And if there's anyone else who wishes to testify, if they can just move up to the front. And thank you, Assistant Commissioner, for your testimony. Mr. Bartholomew, if you could identify yourself for the record and give us a very quick testimony, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. And I'll have a handout if I could get that distributed as well.
And again, Mr. Bartholomew, we're very pressed in time, and so I'm going to move you very, very quickly here.
Oh, a couple things. I want to say thank you for the opportunity to speak. I also want to say thank you to Representative Reinhart. Tried to keep in communication with her through the process. Also want to say thank you to Dr. Heistad. He's been very generous with his time and his patience and trying to explain things to me. Also want to say that the business partnership has supported the implementation of a growth formula for several years. So we're not here in opposition to growth formulas. We support them. All we have asked is that the growth formula be directly linked to achievement of the state standards, and that we have the same expectation, or we don't lower our expectations for some students based on their demographic characteristics. And I guess to get it into a nutshell, I had this eloquent testimony, and I'll skip through it.
And I apologize for that, but we are pressed, yeah. Mr. Bartholomew.
We would argue, it with, again, great respect to Dr. Heistad and Representative Reinhart and the team that's worked on this, the model they've demonstrated today primarily has a target of growth relative to statewide average performance. That's the target that everybody's shooting for, the statewide average. We would argue that the growth formula needs to have as its target the student achievement towards the state standards. And you can do that. You can have a growth model that is targeted towards student achievement of state standards, not just the statewide average in growth. What I've handed out is a copy of a growth model, as an example only, that's used in the state of Alaska. And it's, this particular model is used as a way to recognize successful schools for moving students along in the performance or achievement of state standards. And it's basically just, here's where the kid was last year, here's where the student is this year, and then the state, through their stakeholder group, assigns values to that level of progress from 1 year to the next. And the subsequent pages just show you how you do the calculation for four different students, get the school score at the bottom, and then, again, the state stakeholder group came up with values for how much growth is sufficient. And then you kind of get that definition of how kids are doing. And it really gets, I think, at the heart of Representative Dietrich's question. In the model being proposed in this bill, you're going to know how a school's students are doing relative to the statewide average in growth, but we have no context to where that growth is targeted towards. It's just the statewide average. By doing something like this, and it's just an example, as Dr. Heistad said, there are a lot of different ways to do growth and value added. This is one way towards the state norm. This is an example of another way that you can do it, growth towards the state standards directly. I think we can have all the benefits of the growth model that Dr. Heistad described earlier. This holds high-performing schools to high expectations. It recognizes the efforts of schools facing various challenges. I think, again, in a nutshell, we can have the benefits of growth without abandoning a direct link to state standards.
Thanks, Mr. Bartholomew. Again, I apologize for cutting you off. I would encourage you, I want to actually agree with your values here and with the business partnership. I would encourage you to spend some time with Dr. Heistad, particularly looking at the trichotomous model, which was developed very much in response to that concern, which is a legitimate concern, and perhaps that might be a fruitful conversation to sort of ease the partnership's concern. But you're placing on the table very important values and principles, and I appreciate it and agree with that. We have Michelle, is it Dr. Michelle Walker?
Ms.
Michelle Walker from St. Paul Public Schools. And Ms. Walker, again, I apologize, but this is going to need to be very, very brief.
Sure. Good morning, Chairman Mariani and members of the E-12 committee. For the record, my name is Michelle Walker, and I am the Chief Accountability Officer for St. Paul Public Schools. And I'm pleased to speak before you on House File Number 3329 regarding the state report card And I want to take this time to acknowledge Representative Breinert, as well as Senator Rummel and the members of the Joint House and Senate Work Group on the State Report Card for their leadership and process of engaging key stakeholders to the development of this legislative proposal. I believe that this bill reflects the high priority that Minnesota places on education, and I'm very excited to be a new member of this educational community. I, too, had longer remarks today, but I want to focus my discussion, limited as it may be, on the value of multiple measures and the ways that I believe that this proposed legislation can support the efforts within St. Paul, as well as the needs of children and parents across the state. First, with respect to multiple measures, I believe that HF 3329 provides the policy and legislative foundation to support the efforts that we have ongoing already in St. Paul. With respect to accountability and growth, we have a strategic plan that articulates priorities that have been developed jointly with our community, and it sets forth 12 major outcomes that we use to measure our success. We've produced our first annual report where we really looked at all of those indicators, and two of the major pieces that we use when we want to measure our success is an apples-to-apples comparison where we look at our students compared to their peers statewide that have the same ethnicity, free and reduced lunch status, English language learner status, and special education status, and we use this as a meaningful indicator for our schools to interpret their state results. We also examine student growth on the MCA, too, and that is our opportunity to look at how a student has grown from year to year. So we believe that this legislation will support and undergird that work in a meaningful way. And I think the important point, and I will try not to repeat what has been said, is that we need to have as many opportunities to look at what is going on in our schools and in our districts and measure not just status, although status information is very important, it cannot be used alone. And so these notions of growth, notions of value added, whichever definition we ultimately agree to, is very important to our work. On the two other points in the legislation regarding advanced...
I apologize.
I just wanted to register my support for the advanced coursework and the student survey piece, and to also caution the legislator to look at the funding aspects of additional reporting requirements.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And I do again apologize, Mr. Latta, if you wish to offer testimony. You're going to have even less time than they have.
Hopefully I won't take most of what's left. My name is Renee Lara, Education Minnesota. Had we been part of the discussion groups, we would have flagged this item, and I wouldn't have felt the need to speak and take some time here. I'm going to skip the complimentary comments about the main gist of this piece of legislation, which is something that we have asked for, a measurement credit for growth and value added. But there is a piece on line 10.8, says that the commissioner annually must include an aggregate score showing students' average self-reported sense of school safety, engagement in school, and the quality of students' relationship with teachers, administrators, and other students. I think from reading this just last night, I understand what you're trying to get at. Obviously, students are consumers, and as in the private sector, knowing what consumers think about the product we're offering is a good thing. Obviously, we have lots of other types of consumers in the public school system, businesses, taxpayers, and a whole range of other people whose input we would like to know in order to improve the public schools. But how to get this quality of students' relationship with teachers down to an aggregate score may be a bit of an overreach, or it may be possible, but we are not sure. This is something kind of completely new, and when I get back to the office, I will, in addition to asking our experts about what they think of the dichotomous aspects of value added, I will add this piece to them, and hopefully, if in a working group situation, we may be able to come up with some language that gets to the point without opening it up to criticism based on the way it is written.
Thank you, Mr. Latta, and I would remind members that this particular section is a work in progress, and we would, assuming that we have successful legislation here, we would certainly welcome the participation of Ad Minnesota. We tried repeatedly during the past several months to engage Ad Minnesota more deeply on this issue, so it's good to have you here today to respond to that engagement. Representative Brainard, your closing comments, and then we're going to take a vote.
Well, I'll only say that I would respond more extensively to the concerns about the student engagement measure, but we really don't have time at this point. But I hope in the next hearing we will have professional expert witnesses to support the research base for that, because it is a research-based structure, and the concerns that have been raised can be addressed. And I appreciate the hearing. It's a very complex issue, and I'm sorry that we've had to sandwich so much in such a short time, even though it's been a long meeting. But I welcome further discussion, questions, any input, and I thank you for the opportunity, and I hope
you
support the bill.
Thank you, Representative Brainard. I appreciate the spirit in which you've engaged in this work. I do encourage all members to circle around to Representative Brainard as we continue to work on this agenda. Representative Dietrich, you have 5 seconds.
Okay, thank you. I just want to say thank you to Representative Brainhart and Senator Rummel. They really reached out to the High School Redesign Committee, and they tried to include as much as we asked them to into their bill, and they really came out and did that in the whole rigorous coursework and the career opportunities and the preparedness for post-secondary experience. Thank you very much.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It.
Thank you, Representative Dietrich. Members, the chair renews his motion that House File 3329, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee with a further recommendation that it be referred to the K-12 Finance Committee. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, members. And members, we will not meet this evening. We will not. I'll send out a notice to the other members, so you can clear that from your calendar. Okay. That should make me very popular with you all.
Yeah, thank you.
We are adjourned until Thursday.